Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Christmas is coming, and Christmas Day is typically one of the busiest days of the year for movie theaters. But now, a threat of 9/11-style attacks on theaters during a Christmas Day movie premiere has at least one major chain canceling shows. We'll have the tales on today's show. We'll also have information on a warning from San Diego State Police about a kidnapping attempt that's been reported there. And on a brighter note, our region will finally have night-flying helicopters that can do water drops after dark on wildfires. Find out why on today's show. On Tribal Beat, hear why Native American tribes are dismayed by a provision in the Defense Authorization Bill that is opening up sacred land to mining by a foreign company. We'll tell you about two East County groups that have raised thousands of toys for local children this holiday season. And on Destination East County, we'll have some amazing events, from winter solstice walks to Christmas concerts and much more. We'll have a California News Service alert about some holiday frauds to beware of. And then on Crime Beat, we'll tell you about the capture of the Chit Chat Bandit and about a brazen bulldozer theft in Lakeside. Learn about a vacancy on a local school board in East County, and hear some fascinating facts about bats with tips from a local wildlife expert on how to protect these endangered creatures of the night in our region. On Sounds of History, we'll have recollections of a Christmas long, long ago from a pioneering Lemon Grove resident, followed by a discussion of Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol by none other than his direct descendant, David Dickens of East County. Hear about controlled burns coming up in Cleveland National Forest, plus plans for a permanent homeless shelter in San Diego. We'll have all these stories and more, so please stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. Could terrorists strike local movie theaters? Hackers have threatened 9/11-style attacks on theaters, debuting The Interview, which is set for release on Christmas Day. The threats follow hacks against Sony Pictures Entertainment over its film, a comedy depicting journalists recruited by the CIA to assassinate South Korea's president. A premiere in New York has been canceled, but Sony has left the decision on whether or not to debut the film on Christmas Day up to theaters. At least one major chain, Carmike Cinemas, has canceled its plans for the film showing. Carmike has 278 theaters nationally, including three in San Diego's North County. Some shopping malls are reportedly pressuring theater tenants to cancel the movie showing, fearing that the threats might keep shoppers away as well as theater patrons. Christmas Day is typically one of the busiest days of the year for movie theaters, so canceling the film debut could mean a financial hit for theaters as well as for Sony. Some argue that it would be wrong to give in to terrorist threats and allow suppression of free speech. But others contend it would be irresponsible to potentially put theater-goers and employees at risk by showing the film. The hackers warned audiences to stay away from theaters showing The Interview. However, the Department of Homeland Security has said it has no credible intelligence of an actual attack being planned, despite the threats made by these hackers. Sony hackers also released personal data on 47,000 employees in a massive data dump that some reports indicate will be more costly for the company than the $100 million hit it would take if it decides to scrap the movie, reports The Wrap, a site covering Hollywood news. Employees and former employees have filed a lawsuit against Sony over the release of their personal information as well. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Leon Thompson with an alert for students issued by San Diego State University. An attempted kidnapping has been reported in the area. A female student reports that while walking home in the 6300 block of Alvarado Road on December 12th at 10 p.m., two men grabbed her by the arm and a third pushed her from behind toward an SUV. One of the suspects told her to get into the vehicle, but she was able to break free and run away, the student told police. At least 14 sexual assaults have been reported on campus this year, with additional cases off campus. If you must walk at night, be aware of your surroundings and walk in groups with other students or friends, campus police advise. Always report suspicious activity immediately to help protect yourself and others. The San Diego State Police Department will provide free safety escorts at night for students. To request a safety escort, call 619-594-6659.
The Cedar Fire started at night in a remote East County canyon back in 2003. With no helicopters capable of doing water drops after dark, it quickly raged out of control, becoming the worst firestorm in California history. This week, Mayor Kevin Faulkner announced that the City of San Diego has struck a deal with the county to allow the city's two firefighting helicopters to make nighttime water drops on wildfires in the unincorporated county lands and in 17 cities within San Diego County. The choppers, operated by San Diego Fire Rescue Department, are the only ones in our region capable of dropping water on fires after dark. Supervisor Diane Jacob, chair of the County Board of Supervisors, issued this statement. The new city-county partnership to extend night flights to all corners of our region is great news for residents and builds on our efforts to bolster fire protection. Mayor Faulkner says when a wildfire comes, we have to be focused on results and saving lives, not jurisdictional boundaries drawn on a map. That's why the city and county are embarking on a new level of cooperation to make sure our region is as prepared as possible for whatever comes our way, the mayor said. The agreement took effect December 1st and runs through June 30th of 2016, with options to renew it in the future. But use won't come cheaply. The cost for the county to use these helicopters ranges from $3,700 to $5,000 an hour. The action comes after fires ravaged much of North County in May, when our county was declared a disaster area by the state, and a full decade after the Cedar Fire burned over 280,000 acres, destroyed over 2,200 homes, killed 14 East County residents, and claimed the life of a firefighter. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. This is Leon Thompson with the Tribal Beat Report on East County Magazine. The United States Senate passed a measure authorizing the nation's defense programs Friday, and along with it managed to give lands sacred to Native Americans to a foreign company that owns a uranium mine with Iran. The addition to the Defense Authorization Act of the Arizona land swap were never discussed in public and were added during secret negotiations between the House and Senate Armed Services Committees. The deal was never publicly revealed until the House started work on passing the entire defense bill last week. The National Defense Authorization Act of 2015 is legislation that Congress passes every year. But like they did on attaching extraneous riders to the must-pass government funding bill, lawmakers used the $585 billion defense bill as a vehicle to give protected public land away to a controversial foreign mining company to make billions of dollars selling copper to China. The deal gives a subsidiary of the Australian-English mining firm Rio Tinto 2,400 acres of the Tonto National Forest so it can mine a massive copper deposit in exchange for several diverse parcels. The Southeast Arizona Land Exchange and Conservation Act has twice failed to win support in the House of Representatives, blocked by Republicans and Democrats, liberals and conservatives. In fact, the copper mine project is widely opposed. A broad coalition of southwestern tribal nations and Indian country in general, the Sierra Club and other environmental groups who say the mine will devastate the water that feeds the area's aquifers. They've thwarted Rio Tinto's efforts to acquire the land over the past decade. Both the National Congress of American Indians and the United South and Eastern Tribes have passed resolutions opposing the land swap and mining proposal. According to the Huffington Post, Senator John McCain, Republican of Arizona, has been the lead supporter over the years of Rio Tinto's efforts to acquire the land. McCain was instrumental in attaching the land swap bill into the National Defense Authorization Act at the last minute. The Iran connection comes from a uranium mine in Namibia in which Tehran has owned a 15% stake since the days of the Shah. Richard Sully, coordinator of the London Mining Network, an alliance of human rights, development, environmental, and solidarity groups, says that Rio Tinto is enormous. Its history of attacks on workers' rights and environmental destruction has had a particularly damaging impact across the world. All this is reported by the Guardian of London. And according to the Guardian of London, during the first years of operation, the Namibia uranium mine operated with a migrant labor system, which the International Commission of Jurists declared illegal and said was similar to slavery. Black workers lived on the mine premises and were exposed to dust and radiation 24 hours a day, and the mine became the focus for protests by anti-apartheid and anti-nuclear groups. Shares in the mine are owned 69% by UK-based Rio Tinto and 15% by the government of Iran. Namibian government has denied supplying Iran with Namibian uranium, which could be used for nuclear weapons. Native Americans, particularly the Apache tribe in the area, say digging a massive mine, said to be a copper ore deposit that is a cubic mile large, under the ancestral lands will physically destroy sacred ceremonial and burial grounds. The San Carlos Apache tribe has worked for the past decade to shine light on the Southeast Arizona land exchange that would transfer Oak Flat and nearby lands in the Tonto National Forest, lands held sacred by the Apaches and many other First Nation Americans, to a foreign-owned mining corporation for certain destruction. Sadly, this land exchange has been inserted into the National Defense Authorization Act for 2015 at the 11th hour as Congress prepares to bring the 113th Congress session to a close. Hundreds of tribal governments, tribal organizations, and others have joined the San Carlos Apaches in opposition to the land exchange because it would transfer public federal lands that encompass a known native place of worship to a private mining company. In the face of this opposition, certain members of Arizona's delegation forced a closed-door deal to include the Southeast Arizona Land Exchange into the National Defense Authorization Act of 2015. The land exchange was included in Section 3003 on page 1103 of a 1,700-page bill that was unveiled after 11 p.m. the evening before it came up for consideration. This is exactly what is wrong with Congress and why its approval rating is so low. The act would direct the Secretary of Agriculture to convey over 2,400 acres of the forest. The area around Oak Flat is known as the forest, to a mining company called Resolution Copper, which is owned by the foreign mining giants Rio Tinto and BHP Billiton Limited from Australia. The area to be mined is called the Forest, established in 1905 from Apache ancestral homelands. The Forest is named after the Tonto Apaches, who were forced from the Oak Flat area in the 1870s and imprisoned at Camp Verde Reservation. The reservation is located 15 miles from Oak Flat. During the winter of 1875, the Apache prisoners of war were forced marched to San Carlos Reservation by the military. Over 100 Tonto Apaches died during that winter march. It seems that history is repeating itself. Apache Chairman Terry Rambler wrote, "Oak Flat is a place of irreplaceable beauty." President Eisenhower specifically withdrew the area from mining through a public lands order. President Nixon reaffirmed withdrawal. However, Rio Tinto and the Resolution Copper Company seek to develop and operate the largest copper mine in North America in the Oak Flat area. Resolution Copper plans to use the highly destructive block cave mining method to remove 1 cubic mile of ore, the equivalent of 1,400 stadiums, 7,000 feet beneath the surface of the earth, without replacing any of the earth removed, because it is the cheapest form of mining. Resolution Copper itself admits that the surface will collapse, creating a crater visible from outer space and destroying forever this place of worship. The transfer and resulting mine will forever alter the region's water quality and water supply. Copper is one of the most water-intensive forms of mining in existence. Add block cave mining into the factor, and the need for water further intensifies. The U.S. established the Tonto National Forest in 1904 to protect the region's watershed. This protection will also turn to dust with the land exchange. The beneficiaries of the land transfer, Resolution Copper Mining and its parent corporation, Rio Tinto, will reap billions in American taxpayer resources. They are earmarked to reap these benefits without any guarantee that the copper remains in the U.S. Resolution Copper Project Director Andrew Tamplin admitted in a recent Arizona Central article that the copper ore mined from Oak Flat will likely be shipped out of the country to be smelted. Rio Tinto's top shareholder, Chinalco, a corporation owned by the government of China, cannot wait for this deal to pass. The proponents of the act claim that the bill was amended to address the tribe's concerns with protections, sacred places, and environmental concerns. These claims are hollow, though, because despite changes to require consultation with affected tribes and compliance with the National Environmental Protection Act, it still mandates the transfer of Oak Flat into the private ownership of Resolution Copper, regardless of the results of the consultation or the information and recommendations resulting from the National Environmental Protection Agency process. A mandatory conveyance defeats the purpose of tribal consultations and the National Environmental Protection Agency process that are designed to help provide information before decisions about transferring the land are made. The Southwest Arizona land grab, the outcome is predetermined. It's rendering tribal views and public comments meaningless. Furthermore, Section 3003 would not require Resolution Copper to mitigate impacts on the Oak Flat area after conveyance and contains no repercussions or penalties on Resolution Copper for environmental harm or the destruction of significant and sacred areas. Tribal Chairman Rambler went on to say, "Oak Flat is one of our religious places where our Gaon, spiritual deities, and holy people reside. Apache people have lived, prayed, and died in Oak Flat area since time immemorial. We are saddened that Congress, through an 11th-hour rider, has ignored the will of the people. We are concerned for our children who may never see or practice their religion in their rightful place of worship. We are worried for the children of Southeast Arizona who may have to find new places to live to drink clean water. And we are gravely concerned for the American voter whose voice continues to be ignored. However, the Apache people will not remain silent. We are committed to shining light on the land exchange and the proposed mine until we have no breath."
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
One of the biggest annual holiday toy drives in San Diego County just set a new record. The 2014 Viejas Toy Drive to support the local Salvation Army exceeded its goal, raising a total of almost 15,000 toys. All of the toys were displayed poolside at the Viejas Hotel on December 10th, where a party was held and the exact number of toys was revealed to a cheering crowd at 14,702. Viejas Community Relations also presented Salvation Army Captain Terry Masongo with a check for $15,000 on behalf of the Viejas Band of Kumeyaay Indians to support the Army's efforts in eastern San Diego County. Viejas tribal government staff, casino and resort team members, and guests spent all of November and most of December donating toys, holding fundraisers, and rallying the community to reach their goal. Viejas General Manager Chris Kelly praised the compassion and determination of Viejas team members, guests, and the tribal community for accepting the challenge and exceeding their goal. He said, quote, "We know there's a huge need for assistance in the community. We are proud to help make our community a better place, especially during the holiday season," unquote. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barrena.
The Neighborhood Market Association held its sixth annual NMA Toy Drive for Disadvantaged Youth around San Diego on Sunday at the Crystal Ballroom in El Cajon, raising over 7,000 toys that were given out to thousands of children throughout the community. CEO and President Mark Arabo, a San Diego businessman, community activist, and national spokesman for the Iraqi Chaldean Christian community, has led the toy drive for the last 6 years. He says, "The NMA Toy Drive is our most special event held throughout the year," adding that the preparation took months working with community leaders and the public. "Each year, the toy drive has become stronger, raising more toys for thousands of local children because," Arabo says, "there should never be a Christmas without toys, and there should never be a family who, for whatever situation, is unable to provide their children with gifts for the holidays. I am humbled to see our community step up and support those who are in need of it most. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County has some wonderful events, from winter solstice walks to performances of holiday classics, including the Nutcracker Ballet and Handel's Messiah.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, from the Aztecs playing in the Poinsettia Bowl to the Trout Reopener at Santee Lakes.
So stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
Three winter solstice hikes to watch the sunrise atop Cowles Mountain will be held on December 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Guides from Canyoneers and Mission Trails will lead you to a solstice observatory area. The hike begins before dawn, so bring a flashlight. Meet at the Cowles Mountain trailhead at the corner of Gulf Crest and Navajo for this two-hour round-trip hike. The solstice site is about a mile up the trail, and its age is unknown, though the Kumeyaay Indians use similar sites across Southern California. A highlight of the solstice hike is seeing the rising sun split by a peak on the eastern horizon. But don't stare directly at the sun, since the sun can cause eye damage. You can observe the sunrise safely for a very few seconds through narrow slits, such as between your fingers, held together to enjoy this midwinter spectacle.
Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo invites you to ride the rails aboard its special North Pole Limited train, along with Santa and his elves. Tickets are still available for December 19th and 20th. The fun begins with good cheer at the Campo Depot. Aboard the train, Santa's elves will serve cookies and hot chocolate, visiting with passengers as the North Pole Limited rockets toward the North Pole. An onboard reading of A Christmas Story leads up to the arrival at Santa's workshop, where Santa will board the train for a return trip, visiting with children aboard the train. Advance reservations are generally needed for this popular event. To reserve seats, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
Christian Community Theater's annual production, Traditions of Christmas, will be held at the Don Powell Theater at San Diego State University from December 19th through the 23rd, as Christian Youth Theater celebrates 21 years of Christmas memories. This year's production will feature scenes such as Christmas San Diego Style, A Salute to the Military, White Christmas, exciting swing dances, tap numbers from a Rockette style kick line, and more. For information and tickets, visit cctsandiego.org.
San Diego County Parks invites you to an evening of holiday-themed stargazing and hot cider at Oak Oasis Preserve on Wildcat Canyon Road in Lakeside on Saturday, December 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. The San Diego Astronomy Association will be on hand with high-powered telescopes for up-close viewing of the stars and planets. The evening also features a campfire, sweet treats, and live music. Bundle up and bring a blanket for this fun event, which is free for the whole family.
Southern California Ballet will present the Nutcracker at Poway Performing Arts Center on December 20th and 21st in performances featuring internationally renowned dancer Martha Liebolt as the Sugar Plum Fairy. For tickets and details for this holiday favorite ballet, visit powaycenter.com.
Shabbat of East County invites you to a Hanukkah celebration at Grossmont Center in La Mesa on December 21st at 4 p.m. The event will feature lighting of a giant balloon menorah, music, hot latkes to savor, Hanukkah crafts, and more. For details, visit JewishEastCounty.com.
The Julian Community Choir will perform Handel's Messiah, a beloved holiday classic, on December 21st at 7 p.m. The concert will take place in Julian's historic town hall.
The La Mesa Kickboxing Academy invites the public to its Winter Extravajamba, described as a bohemian extravaganza like no other. The owners have assembled an array of vendors and small business owners for those seeking holiday shopping and fun gifts on Sunday, December 21st from 12 to 6 p.m. at 8322 Parkway Drive, La Mesa. The event also includes live music, art, speakers, and more. There is a small admission fee that's waived if you bring a toy to donate to Toys for Tots.
East County Magazine's own annual holiday party will be held on December 21st from 3 until 6 p.m. at the private home on Mount Helix. Festivities include feasting and merrymaking, wine tasting, foods from local restaurants, music, prizes, and surprises. This event is open only to subscribers of East County Magazine and our staff. You can sign up for your free subscription and your holiday party invitation at eastcountymagazine.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Football fans, heads up. The San Diego State Aztecs football team will be making its fifth consecutive Poinsettia Bowl appearance on Tuesday, December 23rd. This year, the Aztecs will be playing the Navy at Qualcomm Stadium with kickoff time at 6:40 p.m. For tickets, visit GoAztecs.com.
The San Diego Jazz Trio will be performing at the San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room at 8364 La Mesa Boulevard in La Mesa on Saturday, December 27th from 7 until 10 p.m. The trio's repertoire covers original songs as well as Latin tunes and familiar favorites in a bright and breezy style.
The Hukumba hikers and walkers will be hitting the trail on December 27th, hiking through desert terrain to Indian Hill west of Ocotillo. Rock caves and Native American pictographs can be seen on Indian Hill. The hike will continue to an old railway camp and gunpowder shack, then onward to a hilltop view with a spectacular view of Carrizo Gorge. This hike is rated hard and is approximately 10 miles round trip. Dogs are not allowed. Hikers will meet at 8 a.m. at the Imperial Valley Desert Museum in Ocotillo for carpools. After the hike, the Hukumba Hot Springs Spa offered free day use to hikers to soak away those aches and pains, so bring a swimsuit and a towel.
If you're looking for a wild time for kids on New Year's Eve day, you can bring your youngsters to meet local wildlife provided by Project Wildlife and learn about our animal neighbors at the Santee Library on December 31st at 1 p.m. It's all part of the library's Winter Boredom Break program. The Santee Library is located at 9225 Carlton Hills Boulevard in Santee.
The largest outdoor ice skating rink in Southern California is located at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine. And during the holidays, it's open from noon to 10 p.m. from December 20th through January 4th. Whether you're an experienced skater looking for space for spins, twirls, and jumps, or a novice in need of rental skates, you'll find ice available through January 4th at the Viejas Ice Rink, which is larger than the skating rink at Rockefeller Center.
If you love to fish, you may want to mark your calendars for the trout reopener at Santee Lakes on January 10th and 11th, when the lakes will be stocked with 2,000 pounds of rainbow trout. Prizes will be awarded for the five biggest fish caught. There will also be a breakfast sponsored by the Lions Club and prizes including fishing poles, tackle boxes, bicycles, camping gear, and fishing passes. For those lucky fishing folks who catch a five-pound trout or larger, you will also be entered in the grand prize drawing for a flat-screen TV. For details, visit SanteeLakes.com.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provide important information about much more than wildfires. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Indians.
It's the season of giving and, unfortunately, the season of taking, too. Whether it's an online shopping scam, gift card fraud, or a fake charity asking for donations, AARP fraud expert Sally Hermey says always think twice before giving out personal information.
Whether it's your Social Security number or bank account or credit card information, make sure you're absolutely certain that it's a legitimate company that you're dealing with.
AARP's website has a new resource guide to give Californians the tools they need to outsmart con artists before they strike. Hermey says some of the newer scams include a $20 letter to Santa scam and a fake electronic greeting card scam,
which are going to appear like something that you would want to open because it's something innocent and something that you may be expecting to get. But if you're not careful about the address, you may be susceptible to getting malware when you open the greeting card.
She finds fake charity scams especially disheartening because people are so generous this time of year. She says a lot of fake charities crop up in December.
They use various schemes. They'll use names that are similar to a recognized charity, or they will just pull at your heartstrings and you think that you're giving to a legitimate charity when you're not.
Hermey says before giving, be sure to verify a charity on charitynavigator.org or through the Better Business Bureau. AARP's Fraud Watch Network is a free resource that offers real-time alerts about the latest scams, plus help for those who've been victimized. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
This is Ed Barreno with the Crime Beat Report. A man suspected of robbing two banks in El Cajon and a third in La Jolla has been arrested after stealing a van and leading authorities on a chase across San Diego and Riverside counties. 31-year-old Jared Levi Hansen was arrested December 4th on I-15 at the Mercy Road exit, the FBI announced on December 12th. He was driving a stolen vehicle and armed with a .45-caliber semi-automatic pistol. He is alleged to be the robber dubbed the Chit Chat Bandit, according to FBI Special Agent Daryl Foxworth. The first robbery in the series occurred on November 26th at a Wells Fargo bank in La Jolla, where the Chit Chat Bandit handed the teller a demand note and engaged in small talk before leaving with the cash. 2 days later, the Chit Chat Bandit struck another Wells Fargo, this time inside a Vons grocery store in El Cajon. After robbing two tellers, he was seen leaving the scene on a green BMX-style bicycle. Then on December 2nd, a man believed to be the Chit Chat Bandit held up the Citibank on Fletcher Parkway in El Cajon, where he assaulted a bank customer. The investigation, which included El Cajon police and other agencies, led authorities to suspect Hansen of these crimes. They learned that he had reportedly fled to Riverside County to avoid capture. There he tried to carjack an elderly couple's vehicle. Armed with the .45-caliber semi-automatic pistol, he reportedly fired a round into the ground and another at the vehicle's grill, the FBI reports. The couple refused to come out of the vehicle, so Hansen allegedly ran across the street and threatened at gunpoint another man hanging Christmas lights outside. He demanded keys to the man's van, then stole the vehicle. Officers from the Riverside Sheriff and California Highway Patrol pursued Hansen from Riverside County to San Diego, where he was subsequently captured. Thus far, he has been charged only with crimes stemming from the carjacking, though other charges may be filed as the investigation continues.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat Report. A vehicle theft in East County this week was exceptionally brazen. Thieves stole an 18-ton bulldozer from a trucking company in Lakeside. Surveillance video shows the heist was conducted in broad daylight by thieves who loaded up the Caterpillar tractor onto a semi-truck, after first using the dozer to move boulders out of the way. They rolled it out beneath the freeway overpass and over a riverbed, crushing everything in its path. 10 News reports that a white pickup truck at the scene may also be connected to the crime. The thieves are suspected of hot-wiring the bulldozer during the heist, which took over an hour to pull off. The owner is posting signs at local truck stops, hoping somebody will recognize the semi-truck loaded up with a dozer in back. You can view the video at 10news.com.
This is a public service announcement for the La Mesa Spring Valley School District. The district is accepting applications now through January 12th to fill a school board vacancy left by former trustee Bill Baber. Baber won election to La Mesa City Council. Applications for this seat should be turned in to the district at 4750 Date Avenue in La Mesa by January 12th. To qualify, applicants must be at least 18 years old, live within the boundaries of the La Mesa Spring Valley School District, be a U.S. citizen, and a registered voter. Applications are available at the district office or online at lmsvsd.org. The board's four remaining trustees will review applications on January 20th and narrow the selection to eight candidates or fewer. Finalists will be interviewed at a special board meeting on January 27th at 4 p.m. when a selection will be made.
At the Lakeside River Park Conservancy's recent event called Batty for Bats, our correspondent Barbara Lovelace learned some fascinating facts about these winged creatures commonly found across our region. Many people think that bats are rodents. They look like rats with wings, an image perpetuated by a Carly Simon song back in the 70s. But in fact, bats are much more closely related to, are you ready for this, us. Project Wildlife's bat team member Cindy Myers brought along two rescued Mexican free-tailed bats to this event. Rescued baby bats are often treated a lot like puppies, snuggled in blankets and sucking on pacifiers when they're young. Bats play a critical role in our environment. Here are some of the amazing things that Barbara and the other attendees learned about these creatures of the night. Bats, or Chiroptera, are the second most diverse mammalian order after rodents, with over 1,300 different species. In fact, bats make up almost one quarter of all the mammal species in the world. If you notice your hummingbird nectar disappearing from a feeder overnight, you don't have monstrous night-active hummingbirds. You may instead be getting visits from a very thirsty nectar-feeding bat species, the Mexican long-tongued bat that lives in San Diego County and the southwestern U.S. The Western Mastiff bat is the biggest bat species in America, and it lives in San Diego, too. No special equipment is needed to hear the Western Mastiff. They echolocate at a frequency low enough for us to hear, and it sounds like a radar ping. The Congress Avenue Bridge in Austin, Texas, is the largest urban bat colony on Earth. 1.5 million Mexican free-tailed bats live there and emerge in their massive numbers on summer evenings. Citizens were terrified at first, but through the work of Bat Conservation International, this colony now brings in $8 to $10 million a year in tourism. Every summer night at Bracken Cave between Austin and San Antonio, Texas, visitors can witness what Myers calls one of the world's great wildlife spectacles. It's the largest aggregation of wild mammals on Earth, with 20 million Mexican free-tailed bats emerging to feed on 200 tons of insects every single night. The value of the pest control service to agriculture provided by bats in the U.S. alone ranges from a low of $3.7 billion to a high of $53 billion a year, the U.S. government estimates. Nectar and fruit-eating bats help pollinate and propagate food plants that we love, such as avocados, bananas, peaches, cacao, which produces chocolate, and agave, which is used to make tequila, to name just a few. Now, if you hate mosquitoes, you might want to welcome bats, because just one of these little guys can eat 1,000 mosquito-sized insects in an hour. And this next fact is just sweet. Big brown bat pups and red bat pups purr just like kittens. Habitat loss and destruction, as well as wind turbines that can make bats' lungs explode, are contributing to the decline of bat species worldwide. So are myths and misconceptions. You can help protect San Diego's 22 species of bats by following these tips from Project Wildlife. Don't trim tall, dried palm fronds in the spring or summer. 9 species of bats, including western yellow bats, roost there year-round and have their maternity colonies there, and the babies can't fly away. Plus, if there's an active nest or a bat roost, it may also be illegal to disturb them, since many of these species are protected as endangered. But don't ever rescue or otherwise handle a bat, dead or alive, with your bare hands. Doing so could expose you to rabies, which is spread through saliva, and will also be an automatic death sentence for a living bat. The Department of Health has to euthanize any bat that's had direct contact or pet contact because they need to get a sample of the bat's brain tissue to test for rabies. Using leather gloves instead, you can contain an injured animal with a box or towel and then call Project Wildlife at 619-225-WILD, W-I-L-D, for assistance. While rabid bats have been found on rare occasions in San Diego County, it's good to keep the risk in perspective. Only a couple of people a year have died from bat rabies in the entire United States since the 1950s. Your risk is higher of dying from a lightning strike or even a bee sting. Don't use fly traps or sticky glue traps meant for rodents if bats are around, since they can get stuck and die a slow and cruel death. Do you have a swimming pool or large pond that bats might favor swooping over for a little insect snack? If so, you can get a frog log, which serves as an emergency escape route for bats and other small creatures that may fall into the water. And finally, you can help save bats, as well as many bird species, by keeping cats indoors. For more information about bats, you can visit Project Wildlife at projectwildlife.org and Bat Conservation International at batcon.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. It's the holiday season in warm, sunny East County. As we count our blessings, we can't help but think of those who also walked beneath that same benevolent sun years ago in somewhat less happy circumstances. One such person was Dr. Eben McGregor, one of very few doctors in East County in the 1930s, and the only game in town in Lemon Grove. Here are his words, written on Christmas Day, 1956, nearly 60 years ago. I awakened this morning thinking of my early days in Lemon Grove and of the dusty but very pretty little town as I first saw it. Oh, little town of Lemon Grove. Thousands of lemon trees. Nearly everyone had a horse. Lots of people had asthma and had come here for the good climate. I thought of S.D. Eckler on Central Avenue, who came here with $30,000 and sunk it into land that was ruined by the Mattoon Act in the 1930s. Eckler started a huge rabbit ranch. Poor man took credit in the 30s so people could have rabbit stew. I recalled Dr. Charles Good, the dentist, with a big citrus ranch and a nice house, also on Central Avenue. He fixed your teeth for a dollar in the 1930s. And good old Ed Fells, of the Fells Naphtha soap fortune. Not that he had any of that money. He taught me lobster fishing, completely illegal, and the ocean was cold in winter. I thought of that awful segregation case the school board started when they built the Mexican school, and then the Mexicans went on strike at the packing house. How the school board thereafter began to eliminate the Mexicans from the payroll. People like Andy Anderson, good people, Art Ahrens, Reverend Kurtz, and Herman Przybylski were part of that mess. Herman Przybylski had come here from Poland. He had a big citrus ranch and horses. He thought I was a communist because I had run for office on the Democratic ticket. I didn't know the meaning of the word communist in those days. But Herman had me investigated, and I will never forget when he came over and told me I was okay. We lived across the street from each other, for Pete's sake. I was his doctor. And no communist either. That reminded me of Herman's boy Frank, who had terrible asthma and was good friends with the adopted son of Colonel and Mrs. Bryan, who lived in the big show place where Ambassador Hayes, later President Hayes, had visited. The adopted son was always tippling in the parlor and helping himself to the brandy during tea parties. But most of all, I remember Tony Sonka, he who ran the famous general store next door to my home and medical office on Main Street. I remember saying to Tony, "Do you remember that truck that came through Lemon Grove on Christmas with flour and potatoes and somebody's old clothes and other stuff? It was all for the needy. You loaned us a little house to store the clothes. The Depression had struck so hard. I had several thousand patients who had no money. 1 month I worked from dawn to dusk 7 days a week, and I took in $86 in cash. Tony, you fed them, and I tried to keep them alive. Dear listeners, those were the words of Dr. Eben McGregor, who went on to lead the Veterans Administration for President Franklin Roosevelt in World War II. Dr. McGregor's house was designed by the great Alberto Traganza, also a Lemon Grove resident. That was in 1932, but it took 4 years to build because the doctor had no money, because his patients had no money. Patients with construction skills worked off their bills in sweat equity on the good doctor's house. It still stands today on Main Street, an important historic site. For the Sounds of History, I'm Helen Ofield.
Hello, my name is David Dickens, David Charles Dickens to be exact. I want to talk to you today, audience, about the links between me and Charles Dickens and the writers that have become in our family. According to my late grandfather, Charles Elmer Dickens, who died in the summer of 1992, prior to departing, I was told I am related to Charles Dickens, one of our greatest authors of all time, and I am four generations down, so a great, 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 great grandfather, right down the family tree. I'm a current freelancer for East County Magazine, write mostly sports features. However, if something creative comes my way, I'm always happy to take it. Also come from another family member, my father, Bill Dickens, who currently owns EastCountySports.com, has been covering sports locally in East County for over 43 years. I'm going to speak about Charles Dickens today and one of his finest novels, A Christmas Carol, that was written in December of 1843. Not only is this a great selection for the season, but also referring to Dickens' early childhood, humiliating experiences, his sympathy for the poor folks, and great fairy tales he was read as a child. The lesson that should be learned from this particular novel is how greed and the love of money can lead to destruction, selfishness. But in the end, after visits from the Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future spirits from the novel, Ebenezer Scrooge learns to appreciate life. If we as human beings have an abundance of wealth, it should be shared with the less fortunate. The love of human beings far outweighs the gift of wealth. Dickens' humiliating experiences are not specifically indicated in this novel. However, his conflicting feelings for his father as a result of these experiences are responsible for the double personality of the novel's protagonist, Ebenezer Scrooge. In 1824, Dickens' father, John, was hauled off to prison at the Marshalsea, and Charles, 12 at the time, only 12, was forced to stay at inns nearby, pawn off his great book collection, and drop out of school, and take up employment at a blacking factory. Charles had a deep sense of etiquette and intellect, and was very uncomfortable in the factory atmosphere and the co-workers who worked directly with him. His co-workers referred to him as the young gentleman. Charles' father was released after 3 months in confinement. His father made him return to the factory instead of going back into school, which obviously was a mistake, and it only angered and humiliated Charles even further. Charles basically says his happy life went on to be nothing but anguish and pain. These disturbances cause many psychological issues and haunting memories, as Charles goes on. Charles both loved and despised his father. These psychological issues assisted in creating the two different personalities of Ebenezer Scrooge, a cold, stingy, greedy individual, and on the other personality, sociable generosity and goodwill toward all men was his outlook, an angel type of man. Another inspiration was early in his childhood that he observed the lives of men women and children in the most poverty-stricken areas of London and witnessed the social injustices they suffered. So basically, he went on after writing this novel, and he actually, years later, he took it to another level and actually was reading it live on stage, which definitely got a great following. And once he departed, of course, we also know quite a few people went on to create A Christmas Carol movie. I believe the most recent one that everybody has probably seen, the animated version of A Christmas Carol starring Jim Carrey, which is definitely something to see, but it's more a comedic look into the actual novel, which that's not the direction that Charles Dickens was really wanting you to understand. And what I would like you folks in the audience to get from this really is, let's enjoy ourselves as a family and have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and not be all about the gifts and what we could and could not afford this year. Just the warm hearts, getting together, and loving each other. I leave you with that, and this is David Charles Dickens signing off. And again, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year on behalf of East County Magazine.
It's the time of year when San Diego County gets most of its rainfall, and this winter it's more important than ever to take advantage of every drop that Mother Nature delivers to us. The county is asking residents and businesses to turn off your irrigation systems and leave them off for up to 2 weeks after storms that provide significant rainfall. A few rainy days can provide enough water for lawns to survive for long stretches without irrigation, and they provide a valuable chance to save stored water supplies for next summer when water reserves will be even more important to help our region withstand drought conditions. After three straight dry years, the San Diego County Water Authority has declared a drought alert condition, and mandatory water conservation measures are in place countywide. For details about restrictions in different communities, go to whenindrought.org. Mark Weston, chair of the Water Authority's Board of Directors, says widespread efforts to decrease irrigation following storms can save large volumes of water and help minimize the impact of any water supply reductions in 2015. Outdoor watering accounts for more than half of a typical household's water use in California, and it has become a focal point for water conservation as the drought extends into a fourth consecutive year. Jeff Stevenson, a principal water resources specialist for the Water Authority, says that after a storm, do not begin watering again until the top 1 or 2 inches of soil are dry. Lawns that lose their lush green luster will rejuvenate with the next rain. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is a breaking news alert live from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service.
This is Miriam Raftery with some information about controlled burns being planned by Cleveland National Forest. The Forest Service will conduct burns from December of this year through June of next year, as weather and fuel conditions permit. In the Descanso, Palomar, and Trabuco Ranger districts, smoke could be visible across much of East County. Forest Supervisor William Metz says prescribed fire projects help protect communities by reducing adjacent forest vegetation and fuels while increasing opportunities for firefighters to get the upper hand on wildfires sooner. Prescribed fires also support our ecological restoration goals by protecting wildlife habitat and important watershed areas and values, he added. According to the U.S. Forest Service, trained Forest Service crews prepare for the prescribed burns by cutting excess trees and shrubs in the summer months and then burning the vegetation in winter during conditions that allow for safe operations and minimal smoke disruption. By burning the extra fuels in forested and chaparral areas under less severe conditions, prescribed fires also support ecological restoration as fire is reintroduced into ecosystems that depend on it for regeneration. Prescribed burning and removal of fuels also helps reduce intensity of wildfires during the summer months. The burns planned include 500 to 700 acres in the Descanso Ranger District near the communities of Mount Laguna, Alpine, and Pine Valley. In addition, the Palomar Ranger District will have 300 to 700 acres of prescribed burns north of Sunrise Highway near Ramona, Santa Isabel, San Diego Country Estates, Julian, Warner Springs, and Palomar Mountain. And another 500 to 700 acres are slated for burning in the Trabuco Ranger District up by Capistrano and Corona.
If you have any questions on these controlled burns, contact the Cleveland National Forest Ranger District nearest you. The VA House Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the VA House Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
San Diego's Mayor Kevin Faulkner and Council President Todd Gloria announced that the City of San Diego will be setting up a permanent shelter aimed at ending the cycle of homelessness. Mayor Faulkner says, "Every winter, the city struggles to find a place to shelter the homeless." He adds that it's not enough to just provide beds in the winter weather. The city aims to open a 350-bed permanent facility that will also provide supportive services to help San Diegans get off the streets for good. It won't happen in time for this winter, so temporary shelters will stay open. The city is seeking proposals from nonprofits to run a permanent shelter. The San Diego Housing Commission posted an official request for proposals on its website and will accept applications now through January 13th. The commission is hoping to find an existing structure so it can open the permanent shelter by July 1st. Councilman David Alvarez, who represents Barrio Logan, where a temporary shelter with tents has been run each year, says people in the community are compassionate, but we want to see it get resolved. Council President Todd Gloria says the permanent homeless shelter will accept residents by referral, adding that with only temporary facilities, what we see year after year were the same faces. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Hayden Parsley.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.